back with a revenge, unlike Bitcoin, which has been slightly back with a whimper. It's Coin Talk. I'm Aaron Lammer, to be joined shortly by Jay Kang. And we've got a great guest this week. You may remember him as our first guest ever. Ledger Status, my favorite trader on Twitter, is come to give Jay and I a report card on our first season of Crypto Failure. Really, really fun talk with him. We talked through some news and we talked about where the market is right now, which is still confusing to me, but I do feel a little bit better now that Ledger has come on. We are brought to you, as always, by Medium. Medium has amazing writing about crypto. You can find it all at me.dm/crypto. And you can find us at medium.com/cointalk. We have a lot of transcripts up there, which if you want to go back into the archive quickly, maybe just power through some of those CoinTalk transcripts. Okay, here's the show.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped April 2nd at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $7,334.
Welcome back to Coin Talk. Our very first repeat guest, Mr. Ledger Status.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
Is that true?
I've listened to every episode, and I'm pretty sure I'm the first repeat.
Well, congratulations.
We've got a super fan and repeat guest, then. I think you must be the only person who's listened to every episode.
Oh, I highly doubt that. But I will put my repeat guest status on my wall of honor, which doesn't exist.
You're in the CoinTalk Hall of Fame.
That's pleasure. Right.
So how has it been watching us, who you saw as little tadpoles, swim into the world and get eaten by larger frogs?
You mean by bears?
Bears, yes. The right. Venture out of the pond and get eaten by bears.
I think y'all are doing a great job, and I am appreciative of the perspective that you bring to the market, because you're very honest, which most people, you know, if you look at like crypto Twitter or whatever, it's so ridiculous, but it's people that are often unwilling to admit mistakes. So y'all talking about your mistakes is, I think, really good for people to hear. You're not alone. I can assure you of that. And I think, you know, listening to what y'all have talked about, like when Jay got mostly out of the market, I was like, come on, Jay, you're selling the bottom. It's like, not the bottom yet.
While we are on the topic of mistakes, I wanted to bring up, we got some mailbag here from Laura Shin, one of my favorite crypto journalists, pointing out several of probably many, many factual errors I have made on this show.
I feel like she was kind to us and only pointed out like the biggest ones, but she might have like a spreadsheet that has like very, very long.
I was gonna say her tone was generous and she didn't make me feel bad about it. She just wanted to like educate me. So I'm just going to put them out here. Most of these related to our blockchain show, which I will acknowledge, Jay, that we were pretty sure we got so much stuff wrong that we almost canceled like releasing that show.
We had, I believe it was like a 20 to 30 minute long conversation about how embarrassingly wrong we were probably about every single thing.
Okay, so
necessitated us actually canceling that show.
Okay, so here are a few of the things that I got wrong in those two blockchain episodes. One, proof of work was invented in 1993. I think I insinuated that proof of work was a Bitcoin innovation. Totally wrong. Not right at all. I also think, I haven't even actually gone back to listen to these things because I'm too embarrassed, but that I have said on this show that blockchains existed before Bitcoin. That is also not true. So just two of the things that you should do your own research on, as well as not taking anything in the show as investment advice.
And also, you know, I think that, you know, we're being big men here. I'm proud of us.
We have a rigorous
correction policy, and anyone else who says that we get anything wrong, we will look over it, because like, you know, we don't really know everything about everything, and it's very hard to sort of fact check while you're on a microphone. But you know what? Thank you, Laura Shin, for pointing that out. That's a sincere thank you.
to be fair, y'all didn't have that conversation like it was in total authority. You weren't like, this is exactly when proof of work was invented, and this is how all this stuff fits together. Y'all were like, it was like around this time, and somebody did this, right? I don't know.
I'd like to nominate Laura as our public editor, who can investigate various ways in which we've gone astray. And I'd also like to invite her on the show if she will ever come on the show. She runs one of our favorite podcasts on crypto stuff, and I highly recommend people check that out.
All right, should we get to some news
then? Yeah, let's do. So I guess let's do a little news with Ledger here, and then we'll ask him a little bit about what he thinks about the market. I actually mostly invited him on the show just so that I would have someone to defend my bullish positions for me. So I'm hoping that occurs. What do you want to talk about this week?
Something caught my eye, and it really sort of is in the intersection of my interests, which are sports. And for a while, you know, I was very into boxing and also sort of celebrity fraud and ICOs, which is that I'm not sure if you guys saw this, but Centra Coin, which is one of these coins that is sort of said that it was an amalgam of financial products on the blockchain, blah, blah, blah. Here's our ICO. Here's our token. It was one of these things where like it felt like you just cut and paste words from different white papers and then sort of process them all through some sort of random word generator and you pop out with a white paper. They were sort of hit with the SEC saying that they were a scam. So the Nathaniel Popper reported on this, but you know, it was an SEC like release, so a lot of people got it. But the SEC complaint alleges that Sam Sharma and Robert Farkas, co-founders of Centra Tech, masterminded a fraudulent ICO in which Centra offered and sold unregistered investments through a CTR token. Blah, 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 blah. But the sort of, I guess, the lead in all of this, or the most important part, is that this was the coin that was endorsed by Floyd Mayweather and DJ Khaled. And so
didn't they basically say they didn't have even really know who they were dealing with, though, right? Are these the same guys who were like running, like, before they did this, they were running a scheme to like rent like Lamborghinis to people and like a fake high-end car rental service or something like that?
I think that they are pure grifters. Like, if you wanted to make a film about like grifting in 2014 through 2018, like, this would be a great template for it.
I was going to say, this is just like, the story just smells like the Outer Rings of Miami.
Or Las Vegas, or right? Las Vegas. Like, there's part of it that...
They're from Florida, though.
Yeah. There's definitely part of it that I respect, which is that I kind of respect all forms of blatant grift. And I think that it sort of shows that the things that people were saying, that a lot of the people who have entered the ICO space are just straight up scammers who don't know anything about Bitcoin or any of this stuff. I think it sort of did happen, and that it did sort of come out around these celebrity endorsements. Now, the one thing I'll say is that I actually was, you know, as I've always said, I'm mostly in Bitcoin for the memes. And I gotta say, I'm a little bit disappointed that it seems like every single thing that any celebrity endorses, whether like Paris Hilton or Steven Seagal or Floyd Mayweather or DJ Khaled, ends up being a scam, you know? Yeah, but I guess it's really just the best way to locate a scam.
It's funny how when people will be like, you know, we can't let celebrities endorse these ICOs. I mean, how are people going to know which ones are real and which ones are scams? It's like, oh, people will know. They're all scams. There's no real product that would try to get Floyd Mayweather to sponsor its ICO. They're 100% scams. Like, there's no,
okay, so
there's no sheep in the wolf pack.
I've got a question for the two of you about this, which is that, is there a celebrity that you would trust enough where if they endorsed an ICO, look, like Floyd Mayweather has been caught up in legal problems his entire career. Steven Seagal, you know, he's Steven Seagal. Like Paris Hilton, you know, pretty washed up. But is there a celebrity where if they're like, I am really into this cryptocurrency, that you would listen and you would think maybe actually that adds credibility to it? What is the line?
I would say maybe like Ashton Kutcher, because he has a VC firm.
Wow.
Okay, Ashton Kutcher. Wow. That is one that came to my mind as well.
Ledger went there. Straight to Ashton Kutcher.
I mean, I'm not saying I would love it. I'm just saying I wouldn't discount it. He's at least got a real business. But I think a lot of celebrities have VC firms. So maybe it's just more of a critique of VC firms.
I think half the Golden State Warriors have VC firms at this point too. But like, I think Ashton Kutcher is on the far side of credible. Is there somebody who you would be a little bit more uncomfortable with, but you would still say like, maybe this
Wait,
is real?
Wait, Jay, you're saying that Ashton Kutcher has like too much credibility to be used in this game? Oh yeah. Come on.
yeah, he's walking around with tons of credibility on this.
He was on a hit sitcom and has made some tech investments.
Yeah, that's pretty good, I think.
The crazy part here is that it's almost all scams. People aren't like lending their credibility to like angel investments that got set up at like a Starbucks in Palo Alto. These guys are like Florida, like luxury car
scammers. Aaron, can you answer the question, please?
Can I answer the question? Well, I have to say that I saw some project that Mark Cuban had said he was sort of involved with, and I'm ashamed.
But he's
to
way
it.
Far on that side too.
Oh, you're saying I have to go dirty?
Yeah, who is the person who is right on that line where you be like where you're like I don't know, you know, but then you end up saying okay, maybe I trust them.
Tom Brady,
Tom Brady. Like an avocado coin.
I'd say like Draymond would be like right on the border area for me.
I was going to say, which one of the Warriors who are tied up in these VC?
I mean, I would say that like Iguodala is a definite, like, no problem, go for it. Draymond's like straddling that line. Because I could see Draymond getting taken in by some swindlers.
What about Klay Thompson?
Klay Thompson, I would absolutely not invest in anything that Klay Thompson's invested in. I know way too much about Klay Thompson. I've like followed his Instagram for too long for me to ever consider taking advice for him.
Ledger, is there someone closer to the line that you would listen to if they were giving you ICO investment advice?
I can't imagine many sports figures since we're kind of on that frame. I mean,
Bobby Knight?
Definitely not Bobby Knight. Maybe.
Definitely not Bobby Knight.
Maybe the guy from the Seahawks, Sherman.
Oh, Richard Sherman.
Richard Sherman. That's about the closest to the line. He's like super smart, but he's got that.
He got released.
He's got an ICO attitude, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, he is very smart and he's very entrepreneurial. And he's also into Bitcoin. Like, I was thinking about this and I was like, if Lil Wayne endorsed a coin, would I be okay with it? And I think the answer is yes. Because I don't think that if you're that famous, right, and if you have that much money, that you would be sort of putting your money behind a scam for no reason. That same argument could be made for Floyd Mayweather, who has tons of money. But, you know, Floyd Mayweather lives in Las Vegas, and he's always been caught up in this sort of stuff. I think I would trust Lil Wayne.
This isn't a far cry anyway when you consider John McAfee is considered like a influencer in the crypto community. Like, we have real versions of this. We really don't have to imagine it.
Did you see today that John McAfee said that he was getting paid $101,000 per tweet?
I did.
He said he was endorsing.
$105,000.
That's incredible.
You gave him a $4,000 discount.
$105,000.
Okay, so both of these topics actually speak to what I wanted to talk about. In kind of the like similar ways. We're basically talking about the deep need for like marketing within cryptocurrency. John McAfee, like these celebrity ICOs, they're all basically forms of advertising. We got an email, Jay, from a reporter asking us about the ban in Google and Facebook. I think MailChimp has now banned crypto ads. What do you guys make of this? Do you think this matters at all?
No.
Swift no from Ledger Status. Jay?
No, I don't think it matters so much. I mean, I think that the idea that the hyper-accelerant of the crypto prices between November and December of last year was because everyone started seeing James Altucher's face on their web pages. Like, yeah. I just don't buy it. You know, it was because, it was because the media hyped it up. You know, places like Bloomberg or CNBC, I don't think it was because of these like insidious ads that were everywhere. I think, you know, in all things, and we don't have to go down this rabbit hole, but people sort of really overstate the influence of things that people kind of ignore when they pop up on their page, right? So I don't think that it matters that much. It does matter for the ICOs, but, you know, like it's good to have those scams out.
But Altucher, I mean, he was promoting himself, probably some kind of course or something. Whereas an ICO, especially by American law, but even not law, but regulations and guidance that's been given out, even in Europe, really they shouldn't be going after the type of people that you would advertise to on Google or Facebook or Twitter. Maybe you would buy a newsletter ad in like courts, you know, like something like that, where you're going after business people, but you shouldn't be going after non-accredited investors anyway. So it shouldn't influence the ecosystem aside from the type of stuff that shouldn't be happening anyway.
Wait, Ledger, I have a question there, because you've been around a little bit longer than we have. So we all know about Altucher style ads, and I've seen ads for like, it's the hottest new coin, like just like totally like no name, like bozo advertisements. But are like Coinbase and Gemini also feeding their new user flows with this kind of advertising, you think? Or is this only like the scammier end of the pool?
I mean, I don't know what percentage of their onboarding is based on advertising, but I have to imagine that especially Coinbase didn't really have to do a lot of paid advertising because they had everybody at Thanksgiving with word of mouth advertising.
Yeah.
I think maybe it'll become more of a thing to try to attract new customers now that they've all like scaled up their staff and stuff.
Yeah.
But leading into this market, I don't think so.
I'm going to take the opposite tact here, which is I think for the next plateau to be reached, and we're like so far below the previous plateau that maybe it doesn't even matter. But I kind of think that like these huge companies that want to do Silicon Valley type scale eventually are going to need to use advertising and marketing to pad their user numbers. You know, I guess it depends whether you look at the metric of crypto as like how much money is in the system or how many people are flowing into the system. But to flow a lot of people into a tech product, you generally need to like put out a lot of money.
Yeah. And I'm sure that these bans on advertising with Google, Twitter, Facebook, MailChimp's is probably because of spam and they're wanting to maintain deliverability of their entire network.
Yeah.
But for these other ones, like they're just painting a broad brush right now and then maybe they'll try to figure it out as it's appropriate over time. Like you wouldn't want to prevent Coinbase or a Circle, somebody like that, from being able to advertise their services. But right now, it's so much easier just to ban anything around any sort of crypto-based word because that gets rid of the majority of the garbage. And then you start layering back and allowing things over time. But that just kind of gets the monkey off your back on the front end.
Yeah, I mean, full disclosure, also host a podcast about the one other thing that you're not allowed to advertise for online, which is weed. It's notable to me that all of these companies in both cases were like, the potential upside of us of this advertising market is not worth it to deal with the like crap we're going to have to deal with around scams and bad actors. And it would actually be better for us to just not even touch this market. I think that's like in the long run has a little bit of a chilling effect on me thinking about the long-term potentials. Thinking also like, Jay, remember we were talking last week about how there was issues of like dark web stuff and like, you know, crazy bad porn shit stuck into the blockchain?
Yeah.
Another thing that's come out in the last week is that like it's also a big problem with European privacy laws, where there's like laws that you have to be able to like take someone offline if they request
it. Oh, yeah, yeah. The Google forget laws.
The Google forget laws could be a big problem. Like all these things are individually, I acknowledge them as like somewhat trivial, and like clearly there are outcomes where they're not a problem. But all of this stuff does make me think crypto businesses are kind of a pain in the ass for regulators and for internet companies and for all of these people. And that people assume that people are going to root out the bad actors in the system and that the good actors will thrive. There's another direction, which is that the baby gets thrown out with the bathwater and people just don't want to deal with it at all.
Yeah, but I don't know if the ad stuff really affects that, because I agree with you mostly here. But I would say that the one distinction that I would make is that what we're talking about still, and it's one thing that I don't think we've reached, is like a revolutionary moment, and a movement, like a moment where things just sort of flip. and where there is wide scale adoption, and for whatever reason, and it could be like a catastrophic reason, that there is wide scale adoption of Bitcoin and people start taking it very seriously for reasons outside of just the price. And for that, I actually don't think that the advertising matters. Now, I think it probably does matter for a company like Coinbase. Like, I agree with you in the sense that, like, at some point, they're going to have to, like, remind people that Coinbase exists, right? And it's hard if you can't advertise on the biggest platforms. But I don't think it really matters in terms of what we're actually looking for. If you're a Super Bowl long-term case, is, like, a reason for a whole bunch of people to start taking Bitcoin as a currency that they actually use seriously. And I'm not sure if the advertising at that point really matters, as long as somebody can make an eloquent case that this should happen given this catastrophe or like world-changing event happened. So like in that sense, like very long term, I don't think it matters. I do think it matters for like the extant companies right now that are out there, but maybe not as much as it might for like Silicon Valley stuff.
I personally think it'll be along the lines of advertising to use or participate in a service or an application versus advertising like buy our coin or invest in our thing. Because that's like saying, I mean, Apple doesn't run ads saying buy Apple stock. They run ads saying buy Apple computers.
Right.
And as blockchain-based applications begin to exist in a real world with products that people can participate in, that type of advertising should and will be allowed, in my opinion. And it's the, hey, buy our ICO type stuff that is going to go away. And that should go away. That's ridiculous.
Well, I'll also just say as a side note that if none of these people want to take advertising dollars, it's an opportunity for people to create crypto-related entertainment and informational products, which can serve those ads. Our sponsor lines are open, hi@cointalk.show.
Plus one on that.
Anything?
Can I?
Yeah. Hey, Ledger status.
The Ledger podcast as well.
Yeah. Ledger's podcast, Ledger status. And so I don't forget later, where can people find all your stuff on the web, Ledger?
It's just ledgerstatus.com. And our podcast is called Ledgercast, and you can find it there.
So let's talk about what we brought Ledger on the show for, which is that, you know, and this is something you've told us privately on Telegram and through messaging, which is that the tone of the show has become very, very bearish, right? Basically, yes. Every week we're like, oh my God, my bags are so bad. The bags are never going to get better. I'm so glad I sold some of my bags.
If you were to write one sentence that describes the extant arc of this show, it's Jay convinces Aaron everything is bad.
I've noticed.
So, Ledger, we wanted to have you on because we respect your opinion on these things. We, of the guys who are on Twitter talking about the markets, you know, we think that you are a stand-up guy, that you don't have ulterior motives, that you do see this as an educational experience. So, like, what is your sense right now? I mean, we've had, you know, you've read all the headlines. It's very bad. Things are down 60% from all-time highs. They keep going down. Like, but you seem to remain bullish on this. Can you explain to us why?
Yeah. So, I would ask yourself, fundamentally, what is different, if not better, in 2018 than it was in 2017 when everybody was fine with the fundamentals because the price was going up? When you look at it now, in my mind, a lot of the things we needed clarity on, we found clarity, and a lot of the things we were anticipating, we've started to receive. For example, we were worried about the impact of forks, and people that love Bcash can come at me, but Bcash has been, for the most part, not a huge factor.
You heard him, people. Come at
him. Yeah, come at me.
Yeah, come on, Bcash rappers. Drop a verse.
The exchanges are seeing the benefits and getting requests from their customers to enable SegWit, and they've done so. And it's started to improve the transaction times and the cost of the transactions and getting transactions verified, you know, one block after they're made. We're seeing the Lightning Network be deployed and put on a mainnet and get thousands of full nodes running. And you can run those nodes from almost anywhere. And it's opening up a whole new spectrum of what's possible. And there's like, I don't know, four or five different Lightning implementations that people are competing on. That's super bullish. And those are things that we were looking for and worried about, you know, vice versa in 2017. And now they're showing up. We're just all sad and depressed or whatever because the prices down. What we're seeing is, one, it's natural. Market cycles affect everything. As much as I wanted to ignore it, you know, I was thinking like, okay, 11.5, 12, that's a normal drawdown. And we had a non-normal drawdown, but we had a non-normal markup period as well. Sometimes you have to pay the price on the downside to take the time to reset everything. And unfortunately, and this is just the way markets work, you're taking as much money as possible out of retail hands and putting it in institutional hands. One of the news items that I linked to y'all earlier was about the increase in over-the-counter trading, OTC trading, of large amounts of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. And that's, to me, a sign that institutions are getting even more heavily into all of this. And that's a big deal.
So the narrative that you'd basically be formulating there would be people buy during the big manic up period, sell as it crashes, weak hands, etc. Big investors buy up that cheap supply, ride it back up.
Eventually, yeah. I mean, these things take a while too. Like, a lot of times there you need an accumulation period. It's kind of the word you would use on something like that. And we could very well have not seen the lows. And my point would actually be like, not to say, oh, well, these are just weak hands, people shouldn't have sold. But there is a point where like it was a good idea to sell. And then there's a point where it's probably the worst time to sell. And we're getting to the buying side of things, not so much the selling side of things. You could sell today and, you know, we're roughly around $7,000 and maybe you can buy back for $5,000, but you might not be able to, you know, like you could see a rapid price reversal and we could be at $9,000 or $10,000 before you know it. You sold at seven, you panic buy back because you think the party's getting started again, and then it crashes on you again and does go to five, and then you're just gone, you know? I mean, these are vicious markets. So
this is basically a preview of my future. You just laid out more or less where I see the next month of my life going.
I'm just saying it's a possible scenario.
Can I get you to come on and just say, I told you so, when that exact thing happens to me? Because literally the question I was about to ask you was, well, so if we're kind of sitting here in shark-infested water and like, yeah, we can expect a return to 9 or 10 at some point, but we could see a drop, I'm kind of like, why shouldn't my money be on the sidelines right now? It seems like no one knows what's happening right now. And you're kind of espousing something of a HODL philosophy.
I hesitate to say I'm espousing a HODL philosophy. I would say, and I was especially cognizant of this as we were beginning this week, and that was that the downtrend line and the uptrend line, if you just like drew those diagonals, and not people don't have to really understand charting, but just imagine it ends up in this like big triangular form where Bitcoin went up whatever 15x in 2017 and it's dropped, you know, 60 something percent. We were basically right in the middle of that going into last week, and then we dropped below. So we dropped below that trend line, and that was a big deal. We're now clearly in territory that people would call a bear market. That's if you look at like moving averages, and this is historically like with stocks and stuff. So if you're below the 200-day moving average, then you're in a bear market. But, you know, eventually you arise from a bear market.
Wait, Ledger, I want to pause you there for 1 second. I'm going to pause you for 1 second. Jay, you have been calling for this bear market actively on this show, cheering it on like it was a college football team. How did it feel at the exact moment that Ledger just described, as where everyone was like, yeah, you know, but there's going to be that tipping point and it's not going to go below? How did it feel as it crashed through there for you?
I look, everything is random, right? Like, this is something that I learned just from years of being bad at fantasy baseball, which is that you have to sort of like take out the narrative part of it and what you thought. And so my thought essentially was a narrative based idea, which was essentially that I felt like the buzz that went on around the holiday seasons was gone, and that a lot of like sort of the scammier things, whether it was Tether and Bitfinex, which I think was overblown, but certainly was not false, you know?
Oh, it was totally false. It was unproven.
But do you feel like there was no sort of spoof trading or or fraudulent trading going on, not only on Bitfinex, but also on like Korean exchanges or like Japanese exchanges. I mean, like, you know, like, of course there was.
I think the stuff going on with Korean exchanges, you have a much better argument than just saying that they're fraudulent tethers. Like that guy, the guy that promoted all of that, I think has been one of the most ridiculous characters in crypto because he can't prove anything.
Shots fired.
Well, my point is, like, while I think it's ridiculous that there's not an audit, but there's just no full justification that there's not those dollars. So you're talking about collateralizing a stable coin, basically. And when more people want it, then you print more and then you put more money in the bank to be able to manage that. And as the ecosystem's growing, you need more of those dollars to provide enough liquidity for people that want those dollars to trade in and out of.
Okay, that's fair. Look, we don't have to full-on endorse, and that's why I tried to hedge a bit. We don't have to full-on endorse what he said, right? But we can say that there are things that would catch the eye of any sort of financial regulator, and I do agree that what was going on in Korea with sort of money laundering, but also sort of the trading that was going on over there, because they had absolutely no regulations on those exchanges, that it probably did drive the price up some. So I was saying that because Korea clamped down on regulations and sort of eliminated a lot, maybe not all, but, you know, a good portion of the Chinese money laundering, that I just thought that the main things that were driving the market up were going to disappear. Now, this is all a way of saying that I don't think that I was right or wrong about that, you know, but that was just the reason that I gave. And I actually still don't know if the, you know, it's just one of these sort of linear argument things or causation correlation things, like, is that why the market keeps going down? I actually don't know. You know, I can't say yes or no, but that's the way in which I grasp like these concepts. And that was what was telling me that it was going to go down all the time. Yeah. I don't know if it's even really interesting to figure out whether I was right or wrong, but like, I do have a question for you, Ledger, which is that like,
it's unknowable in a way.
It is kind of unknowable because like, we're just dealing with random, right? So the question that I have for you, which is that, I don't want to like mischaracterize myself and say that I'm super bearish for life, right? Like, I think that the technology is good. I think that cryptocurrency is philosophically interesting.
I'm thinking about becoming an optimist once I'm rich enough to retire.
Isn't there a way to do a bullish attitude towards crypto that is not like we should buy now, you know, that like it's time for the market to turn? Because the one thing that I've noticed is that a lot of the traders, and I don't include you in this necessarily, but that the people who are on Twitter, who are on Telegram, who are talking about charts, that they have a very short-term, almost day trader type attitude towards it. Isn't it just possible that like this just keeps going down for a while and that in the long span, even of the life of Bitcoin, which now is about 10 years or something, that, you know, it's really not that long of a time for this to be going down, but that it might just be like another 6 months of this and that maybe it's better to be on the sidelines for that.
Yeah, I mean, saying you should sell sometime is not to, that doesn't mean that you like don't believe in crypto. There are people that are extremely good at this stuff that always have a position in cash ready to buy when the time is right. And then in these markets where they saw what was happening and they saw the euphoria, they saw the separation of price from the averages. So like, you know, the price was just escalating too quickly. I know people that have been in the system or into Bitcoin for years and years, and they were selling heavily above 15,000. And, you know, they knew they weren't going to catch the exact top, but they were seeing the possibility of what was there and that there had to be corrections. And the difference was that along the entire bull trend, the latest one that spans, you know, the big bear trend started in late 2013. And then there was a year of accumulation that we could have ahead of us using the same parallel. So like if you look at where we are compared to that bear market, we could easily have a year or more, like maybe 2 years even, where we don't breach the all-time high. We didn't breach the all-time high from the last bear market until 2017. We spent over a year in the downtrend after the last, you know, kind of euphoric top. And since we've pretty much broken the cycle, if you will, the likelihood is that it will take quite a while. I think if you want to compare it to something, if you think of the way that when the NASDAQ popped back in 2001, it took like 10 years to come back. So if you shrink that market cycle, but if you look at the chart, it looks, it's eerily similar to what we see with Bitcoin. That slow grind, that bleed could take us easily to $5,000. Some would say $3,000. There's a technical support level at both, in both regions. I just know personally, my philosophy would be I'm going to get as much Bitcoin as possible if we go $3,000 to $5,000, because I do believe there'll be another day where we're $20,000 plus. And if we're at 6,800, 7,000, 7,500, whatever the price is when this episode is released, like that's close enough to the $3,000 to $5,000. Sure, that's another 50% drop, but like my goal is just to get more Bitcoin because I do believe in this ecosystem broadly, and there are enough bullish fundamental reasons to believe that the price will go up in the future to make that a worthwhile endeavor for me, even if the US dollar equivalent is not great.
But you are holding some cash to potentially buy at a $5,000 or a $3,000 level should it reach
there. If we get to $3,000 and $5,000, I'm going to find cash in any way possible.
I will start robbing banks.
No.
I have a broad question for you and Jay then.
Sure.
If you were actually truly bearish right now, which means you don't think it's going to go up from here where we are at 7,000. Yeah. Basically, you're like, Bitcoin's not dead. What do you think, Jay, it would feel like if Bitcoin did die? Like, what would tell us, both of you guys, what would like moment would tell you, holy shit, this really could be a death spiral?
Yeah. I mean, look, I think that I would, I don't have interest in reinvesting until it hits about like under five or three. I mean, I think at three, I would probably get back in. But I mean, I think that if it kept going down for another year, then like sort of this slow grind that's happening right now, like grind down, then I don't think I would worry long term, honestly. I still think long term, it's a good idea and it's a good investment. Think that a lot of people might lose interest and that it might sort of take a little bit longer to rekindle it. And like I said, my general thought is that there's no sort of market action or like spike up that's going to rekindle this. It's got to be like something big happens. Like, I don't know what it would be. Like, it might be a massive market crash and people make a good case that we should be investing in crypto instead. Or it might be that a major economy fails and a lot of those people start to convert into crypto. I just think it's going to take something like that. But that sort of stuff happens all the time, you know? So like, I'm not saying that it's not going to happen. Like it will certainly happen. I just don't know when that's going to be. And I'd rather have some sort of confirmation that that had happened to get back in than to sort of like get back in and hope, you know? I don't know if that makes sense.
No, I think that makes sense.
Some of that's generational too. You know, the people that do traditional markets trading, or they look at like, I listen to some podcasts that cover traditional markets and, you know, currency trading, commodities trading, all that kind of stuff. And there's a ton of uncertainty in the broader market right now, not just the stock market, but also the way that monetary policies work from governments, the way central banks are required to do things, whether or not the dollar will continue to be the global, you know, world currency. Like just recently, for instance, China started saying that they were going to not use the dollar as their price basis for buying oil. And there's all these concerns that there's going to be a bear market in bonds. There's also a broad consensus, and it's not that the market, the stock market, is going to crash tomorrow. Although I guess that's possible. It's had a rough rough month.
Or maybe it will.
But the people,
or maybe, yeah, today was rough.
The people that I listen to that are very smart, they tend to think it's not that the market's going to crash right now, but essentially we're on the latter part of what you would call like the business cycle of the stock market. So we're closer to a recession than we are to just an extended boom. We have interesting years ahead, and Bitcoin's going to be a part of that conversation. And crypto is going to be part of that conversation. And right now, there's definitely a lot of correlation between the crypto markets and the traditional markets.
Is that particularly true among like tech stocks? From what I understood, the most overlapped investor pools are people buying tech stocks and buying cryptocurrencies.
That's probably true. BitMEX has great research on their website, and they noticed a broad correlation with the entire S&P. But tech stocks are an outsized portion of the S&P too right now. So I think that's a fair statement.
And are getting crushed right now, pretty much across the board, right?
Yeah. We may lose that correlation over time, and it's possible to see at least a portion of the cryptocurrency ecosystem. So maybe not like all your ICOs, those might be looked at more like a tech stock, but the ones that are currency-based or like can be treated more like a commodity, like you could treat it like gold or silver or copper. If it's truly considered a store of value, then that could be a safe haven asset class down the road. It's not that way today, but it might be in 5 years. And if stuff doesn't hit the fan for 5 years, then like that could be very interesting for crypto and for I think Bitcoin in particular, but really there's a lot of interesting stuff that's going to happen. And I don't think digital currencies, the blockchain, all that stuff's going to go away. Like the technology is no less exciting today. It's just that y'all are depressed. I'm depressed. Everybody's depressed because their portfolio values are down. Your Sumo coin is totally wrecked. You just got to deal with those things. But I think the smart money is looking at the market very closely right now. And therefore, I want to be looking very closely at the market right now. I want to stay involved. The people that I know that don't really have to work anymore if they don't want to, some of them bought the top in the last bear market, you know, but then they stuck around. And when Bitcoin was boring and it was doing all that accumulation at the bottom of the zone, and it was when no one else was paying attention, that was when they were trading anything and everything they could to earn more Bitcoin and preparing themselves for the next big bull run. My goal, at least right now, is to do the same, to prepare myself for the next big bull run. These are very different market cycles than traditional market cycles, even if they're still a market. And I'm going to stick around and learn, you know, and try to earn some more Bitcoin. And I think that's a relatively smart thing to do right now.
Jay, are you swayed?
He's still not going to buy until 3K.
Yeah, I'll buy at 3K. I mean,
man, if it does go to 3K, Jay's going to be partying on us so hard, and he's going to have so many Bitcoin.
I don't know. I think if you say that though, like there's a chance that you then just convince yourself that 3,000 is expensive too, you know?
Yeah, maybe. All right. So one thing that you talk about quite a bit, I think, that we wanted to ask you about as well, which is, and look, this is a question that Aaron and I bandy about. It's about sort of the health of alts, right? So mm-hmm. I think that we can broadly agree that some alts are, that they're real projects. So like, you know, Monero or, you know, like Zcash, like these are things that have actual like science and tech behind it. And, you know, like they have a use case and they're interesting. Mm-hmm. Do you think that for the vast majority of shit coins, right? And like we can define it as loosely as you want. Like let's say that like the line is something like NEO or even like Qtum or any of these sort of alts, Stratus, these alts that people were big on like just a few months ago. Do you think that those are that most of those are just dead at this point?
No.
Some of those are kind of prestige alts. Qtum, that's like an Ashton Kutcher of alts level pick.
I thought you were down on Ashton Kutcher. Ledger and I are the Ashton Kutcher bulls.
Qtum's like, you know.
All right, well, let's draw the line. Let's draw the line at Qtum. Let's say that Qtum is a shit coin. Right?
I will acknowledge that Qtum is completely wrecked right now.
Yeah. Do you think that these things are ever going to come back?
Price-wise, I think there are opportunities in pretty much any coin out there. Coins that are vaporware can still trade and go up, even in a market like this.
Ledger Status says buy all coins.
I'm not saying buy all coins. I do think the best thing to do is to give whatever you're looking to trade at least that good first smell test, and that is try to find out who's their team, who's working on this, like who's involved. Y'all mentioned Zcash, and like one of the things you first know about Zcash is there's all these PhDs that are involved in it, right? Y'all did the Zcash versus Monero kind of comparison show. And there are enough solid fundamental projects where there are real teams of people trying to build solutions using the blockchain with one thing or another. There are real people working on this stuff. And if you can find the one that has good teams, I just heard Nick Coate, he goes by Piss Pie. He was on another podcast.
Oh, wow. Piss Pie's endorsement.
He was talking about how he thinks that crypto is going to be the next big, I think he called it like a brain sink or something like that. So, you know how Wall Street recruited all the Ivy League computer science majors?
Yeah.
And his point was that the cryptocurrency projects are going to be the next industry to do that.
Can you imagine what the, like, the seniors at graduating Stanford class, like, crypto shit must be like?
I'm sure it's incredible.
Those kids must be fucking going buck wild, getting paid.
Yeah, and that's, but they're going to create stuff. And some of that stuff is going to be awesome.
I don't know. I feel like the way that the world is going right now, the majority of very smart, like, spectrum-y guys in computer science PhD programs are probably going to all start YouTube channels and rant about political correctness.
I don't know. I think those dudes want to get fucking rich.
Yeah.
Like, you could just make so much money as, like, a blockchain engineer right now. Like, where is all this?
But where? Okay, I do have a question about that. Where can you make money?
Just work for any one of these companies who just ICO'd.
There are projects.
$30 million and no project?
But there are projects.
Yeah, like, I don't think they're paying for engineers, though.
Yeah, they are.
They are.
Let's use an example. And this is not an endorsement, but I looked it up before the show. So EOS got featured by John Oliver. I think y'all talked about that on March 11th. And for what it's worth, I think I've heard that they have something like 40 engineers working on this product. And right now it doesn't exist, but they definitely have people working on it. And by the way, when it was on John Oliver's show, since then it's up like 30% relative to Bitcoin. So even though he definitely poked some holes in that project.
Hey, it's good to be on TV.
It's good to be on TV.
As Ripple will tell you, at least for a while, it's good if you're on TV.
And I've heard of several other projects, like one I own a little bit of this, but it's not, again, it's not an endorsement. So, like, Juan, they've got dozens of engineers working on this. Y'all have never heard of that.
Literally, you could have just made that up, and yeah, Juan could be totally fake, and we would never catch you. I have never heard of Juan.
Is it W-A-N or is it J-U-A-N? Is it, like, the name Juan? Like, WanCoin?
It's W-A-N. So, it's recently on Binance. And by the way, if I'm trading something right now, which I am, I'm actively trading. I'm even doing the most ridiculous trading challenge where we couldn't have started it at a worse time. So it's this 100x trading challenge that I'm doing with my buddy Beast Lorian, is what he goes by on Twitter, where we're trying to 100x a small amount of Bitcoin just by trading it over 6 months. And we're doing it now in a bear market. And right now, I've made several trades, and I'm
so
like,
"So it's who can lose money is the fastest."
Yeah, I just got back above break even, and I'm like doing some good trading. anyway, so like for me, I go where there's volume, because if you go try to go to some of these exchanges like Poloniex and Bittrex right now, they just have such low volume. You can make purchases of altcoins that are like totally in the tank. And then just wait like 3 months or 6 months or however long it takes until alts are back, if you will, in quotes. And then you sell it and you make your 2x, 3x, whatever amount of extra Bitcoin. If you want to make shorter term trades, you got to go where there's some volume. So that's like Ethereum, Litecoin, you know, the big stuff that's on something like Coinbase or Bitfinex, something with very few trading pairs. Or the other place is Binance. And on Binance, every day there is a dozen or two dozen coins that just have an extraordinary amount of volume from traders all over the world. And you can trade them on low time frames and trade them just like you normally would and try to earn some more Bitcoin. But you have to apply trading strategies and stuff. And that's been my strategy.
One addendum to that story, Jay, is that WanCoin with a J is still available. And I think it's a kind of a dynamite concept.
Oh, you mean like we could make WanCoin.
You could get that WanCoin. You could get WanCoin on Cryptopia for sure.
WanCoin.io.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I have one more question for you, which is we've gone up and down and down and then super up and then down. Like, what do you think is going to be sort of the point where all this breaks out again and we see what we were saying before? I mean, you obviously think that could still happen, or else you would have, because you are a smart guy and you, like me and Aaron, both have, you know, kids and bills, that you would have flipped your money to something a little bit more stable. Like, what needs to happen for us to kickstart this thing all the way back up?
I think one possible thing is an ETF, and the CFTC actually requested whatever appropriate authorities consider some of the ETF proposals.
Okay, but they're already ETFs, right? Like, no. Grayscale. And
No. Those aren't ETFs. Those give exposure to institutional investors, but an ETF makes it available so that you can buy something in your Fidelity account or whatever. So that's like bringing retirement account money into this whole thing. And that's the only way most people trade anything. And if you tell somebody, hey, pick between small caps, mid caps, crypto, what? You know, it's like a crypto ETF? I can put 5% of my 401k money in that? A lot of people are going to say yes to that, because a lot of people have heard about this stuff but haven't really made the move. But if one gets approved, that'll be just an enormous fundamental factor playing into it all.
I do agree with you on that. I think that if there was a stable, representative, and fundamentally sound ETF product that was available for people to trade, and it wasn't like the Robinhood crypto thing where there's a billion people in line and that nobody can really access it, I do think that that would be a game changer. But like, isn't that also bad for crypto in the sense that like it kind of gets us further away from the philosophical fundamentals of it?
It depends on what people own, and it's still a gateway into people figuring out like the real components of crypto.
Like, do you really think that people who buy a Bitcoin ETF are then going to like buy Bitcoin and start thinking about anarcho-capitalism and stuff like that?
Who cares?
Maybe, but it'll affect the price, that's for sure.
What do you mean, who cares? I mean, if Bitcoin has like a real sort of worldwide adoption, if people get excited about it, if it is used for cataclysmic events, then the idea of it matters. Like, if you're arguing that the idea of it doesn't matter at all and that you're just doing it for the price, you should invest in something else, you know, like something a bit more stable.
Don't you think the very like awareness of Bitcoin as an investment vehicle raises awareness globally of like Bitcoin as an idea? I feel like it's like even on Fidelity, it's still like a great advertisement for it. It's like having like your movie on Netflix or something.
Yeah, but it also might just lead to everybody.
Spreading your brand.
It might just lead to like a consolidation of Bitcoin into Fidelity ETFs. That's all I'm saying.
It's true.
Well, here's something that makes me bullish no matter what. And that's that authorities are definitely paying attention to this ecosystem. And to me, that's a big deal, because they see the potential, because they see it as a threat. Like, if you look at some of the governments or whatnot, I think that crypto is here to stay. I think there's enough innovation in the technology. And, you know, it's possible that Bitcoin doesn't win, but cryptocurrency as an asset class will exist. So I did a doodle, and I was just trying to answer your question. So best case scenario, I'm saying we retest all-time highs by, like, September. That's a technical reason based on some trend line stuff.
I think we've basically set up Ledger Status's next appearance on this show. It'll be sometime between now and September, and we will be calling and back this clip.
That's if we save like 5K plus. If we go as far down like 3K or less, and we make like a big bowl like we did last time, I think it could take until like the end of 2019. To break all-time highs. Either way, whenever we break the all-time high, it's going to melt your face, because we're not going to stop at 20,000. So if you can think about how many Bitcoin you have exposure to now, I don't care if it's, you know, 0.1 or 101 or whatever. Think about that. Think about the price right now, and I'm saying book it, as long as you're doing some smart trading, that by before 2020, you'll have a lot more money. To me, that's appealing. And I want to be here to see it happen. And that's what I'm banking on. So I'm staying in the game.
I'm just enjoying the image of Jay having his face melted off by Bitcoin.
Well, see, what's going to happen is if it goes to 3K, Jay's going to be like, nah, it's just dead. It's just dead.
Look, there will be a FOMO point for me.
Yeah. Jay will get FOMO quickly.
There will be a FOMO point for me. See, like, you've seen Bear Jay, but, like, you know, FOMO Jay is just as powerful.
Jay's going to get wrapped in by some kind of crazy prediction market where he starts, like, calling world like news events or something, and he's going to end up with some Bitcoin. And it's just going to be right back in the game.
I want to, if you'll give me the chance for one parting thought, I would just say,
yeah,
please.
I would just say, you don't go straight to any price. Like, that's too quick, you know? Like, these things take time to develop. What we'll have throughout all of this is volatility, because there's lower liquidity in the crypto market than there is in traditional markets, and there's greater volatility, meaning larger price swings that you can take advantage of, and you can lose money doing that, but you can also make money. And that's what gives great opportunity. No matter which way the price goes, if you trade and you play your cards right, you're willing to be a bull or a bear on the trade. So, like, you can make money as it goes down too, you know, you can short things. Then you can still do well, even if it goes down, if it goes sideways, if it chops, because we will maintain a degree of volatility. So I would just tell people to not get too discouraged, but also, you know, if you're in with more than you can afford to lose, and that's where I think a lot of people got and why they're freaking out so much, then you're just in trouble. I don't have great solutions. That's why people always say, don't put in more than you can afford to lose. But there will be sunny days again in crypto, I assure you.
Yeah,
I believe in it too.
If for no other reason is that people just, like, I feel like people just want more. People want to, like, get back into it, you know? People want basketball season to start again.
Now, what we know here, we now have clear and evident signals of when it's time to sell, because we saw everything at the end of 2017, right?
Yeah.
So whether it's Floyd Mayweather endorsing a cryptocurrency or whatever else, like, we now have some really clear signals of when to get out. So we've learned some valuable lessons here over the past few months.
All right. Well, let's talk again soon.
It's good to be in with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Ledger.
All right. Later, guys.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped April 2nd at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $7,334.
Thank you for listening to Coin Talk. You can get in touch with us at hi@cointalk.show. We will be doing another mailbag sometime, so get those questions in. This episode was edited by James Nicholson. Thanks to my co-host, Jay Kang. Thanks to Ledger Status. You can find a lot of the stuff he's doing online at ledgerstatus.com. You can find us at medium.com/cointalk, including transcripts. Thanks to the good people at Medium for helping making this show possible. We will see you soon.